have some information presented. This is an informational meeting. We have two items on the agenda. One of them has to do with what's called a new front door, which is a concept that was developed in the 2003 time period that basically does what we wanted to do with our baby boomer preparedness bill, and that is have communities take a look at how we're going to deal with the rush of the tsunami, so to speak, of baby boomers who are suddenly going to be seeking services, and we need to be prepared for that. During this time of budget crisis, which we will probably, well, who knows, the projection is that the revenue projection is down. We don't know what it's going to be like in 2009. I think philosophically this is the time that we work very hard to consolidate community services and prepare ourselves for the 2009 budget so we can come in with a realistic request based on work that we do between now and 2009. And that's our task starting today, is we are working on setting the groundwork for community consolidation of services, a single point of entry. Some communities have that, others don't. Rural communities are probably needing the most help. But the new front door is a strategy that does consolidate, that does provide a single point of entry. And so to give us kind of an introduction to that, Barry, would you please come up, please? Barry Donenfeld will kind of walk us through the new version and respond to questions that we have. So, Barry, would you introduce yourself, please?
Thank you, Senator. For the record, I'm Barry Donenfeld, and the printed agenda is incorrect about the agency that I work for. It's the former name of my agency from 3 years ago. I am the executive director of Northwest Senior and Disability Services, which is the area agency on aging for Marion, Polk, Yamhill, Clatsop, and Tillamook counties. I'm also the current chair of O4AD, the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. Okay. And just for the record, several of my colleagues are in the audience today that represent other geographic areas in the state, including the district of the chair and the vice chair. Both of the directors from those areas are in the room also. So if you have, when we get to the question and answer, if you have more specific questions that might be targeted to things in your district, we do have people here who know the specifics of what goes on actually in the areas that you specifically represent.
Mr. Chair, I'm sure that was totally coincidental.
Yes.
Well, actually, what was coincidental is we were having a statewide meeting in Salem at the same time this was scheduled, and so they were already here.
Oh, okay.
But it makes sense to bring them here when they're in town.
Absolutely.
So let me start by once again. Yes.
James Taves is here right now.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Approaching you. So why don't we go ahead and then and have James make his comments first, and then we will get back into this. Yeah. We were anticipating that you might be here a little bit late.
I am a little bit late.
Yeah, well, no, we got word that you might be tied up in another meeting, and so we were going to just start with Barry. But why don't we go ahead and hear, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. James Taves from the Department of Human Services. And very briefly, I'll really let Barry get into the meat of it. As part of our long-range planning process on the whole senior disability system that we've talked about at some length in previous sessions, the whole concept of what's been called previously the new front door is probably going to be a centerpiece of our plan, and it really has to do with equipping communities with a whole bunch of resources that they can use for seniors and people with disabilities long before they need paid public assistance. And Barry can sort of describe those things in detail, but the issue for us is if we don't address the pre-Medicaid, the pre-spend down group, and help people stay in their own homes with their own resources, with as much wraparound assistance as we can before they actually need Medicaid long-term care system, the system will not survive, because we can't simply sit back and wait for the time that people need full-blown paid public assistance. I had mentioned in a previous hearing there is finally a sort of a national strategy emerging around this. The aging directors, or the directors of aging agencies, also aging directors around the country, and the area agencies on aging and their national association, and other the national Medicaid directors are all starting to coalesce around a major federal initiative that actually has the actuaries in the Medicaid, the CMS agency, and Medicare beginning to do projections saying, if you really resource the pre-Medicaid, pre-spend-down group and provide lots of support to that group, you can actually save money in Medicaid and Medicare. And they're beginning to make the argument, and there will be a piece of legislation introduced this session of Congress that will propose to move money from the mandatory side of the budget, which is Medicaid, Medicare, over to the Older American Act to be distributed to the states either through grant or formula for these kinds of activities, and allow us to capture federal match. Mm-hmm. And part of that potentially may include a limited in-home benefit, such as an OPI-type program. And those would be our dreams come true, if we could actually take some of our general fund programs that's not in Medicaid, capture federal match to do those kinds of supports. So I think both in terms of the emerging federal agenda and all of the planning around the new front door, or whatever we'll end up calling that portion of our planning effort, it is really going to be kind of the centerpiece of where we have to go with this whole planning initiative. And so with that,
do you have any information about the process of the emerging federal agenda? Where is that discussion taking place? Among provider groups? Among the CMS?
Mr. Chairman, right now there are detailed discussions going on between the United States Administration on Aging, CMS, the National Association of State Directors of Aging Services, the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging, N4A, the National Medicaid Directors. There is a flurry of activity and planning that's occurring across those groups exactly around this type of agenda, and I think they're close to crafting a piece of legislation. There was actually some hope they might get something even introduced in the President's budget. That hasn't happened, so I think the goal is to get a good group of senators and representatives that will come forward with that legislation this session yet.
Yeah, slightly off topic, and I don't want to, James, I don't want to put you in a squeeze here, but if you could get us some information, and I'm getting off topic and going to the rebalance at this point. It's my understanding that the DHS rebalance may be on the back of seniors, and which is a great concern of mine. I mean, for example, the increase in the rates for adult foster care may be the lower number, although there is. So there, and I understand that DHS does funge across disciplines there, but it would be nice for us to be able to make a more compelling case to our colleagues to try to stick with a higher number than I think what they're projecting right now. It's to stay at the 9 rather than the 6. So if you could, and I know that's kind of putting you in a spot a little bit, but if you could kind of give us some impact numbers and stuff like that, so we can advocate a little harder. It would be helpful. Agree with that?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to be carrying. We are going to be carrying the bill tomorrow on the floor, 1061, and we'll reference section one and also talk about the remainder, the bill itself, which doesn't have 1061, and any information. I don't know that I would use specifically word for word what you said and attribute it to you, but I mean that would that would be helpful. I think we're okay, though. Are we still in pretty good shape as far as the rebalance in Ways and Means, do you think?
You don't know.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, the department's proposal on the rebalance is still the department's proposal.
Right.
We're still proposing
that we
move out of savings in other areas in the senior disability program, $9.7 million that would start that increase on April 1st across all those programs. The issues in the Ways and Means Committee around the revenue forecast and other concerns about caseload shifts in other parts of the department are still there. And so the issue is whether they may delay that or cut it in half or put it all into the disappropriation and e-fund that we would have to come back at a later time. I think that's all still at play. And Ways and Means was meeting till like 7 o'clock last night, and we're still discussing these issues. So I don't have a sense where they're going to end up. But from our perspective, our proposal still remains what we think we should do.
Yeah, I mean, my first fear, and I hope it's been taken care of at this point, is the potential of taking money out of the rebalance, clear out of the department into other things, which I'm pretty sure is not going to happen at this point. But as I understand the proposal they're looking at with the six would probably be a delay in implementation, you know, so it could be full rate later on in the biennium. But we know the impacts, and even of a delay. And I think when we're carrying the bill, we'd like to be able to make a case, you know, and clearly Ways and Means is going to do what they're going to do. But I'd like to be able to shine a little bit of light on it when we're carrying the bill that no longer has that piece in it, but is related. Mm-hmm. So.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Cruz, I mean, again, the crisis paper that we, with all the caseload charts and the information in there, is probably the most compelling set of arguments that we've made so far. So,
well, and as far as the DHS as a department, we had a discussion about divisions and the SPD division. We want to keep the money within that division. We don't want it to spill over into other parts of DHS, and certainly we don't want it to leave the department, but then that's a Ways and Means decision. What I'd like to do is go back just a bit to what you were talking about. I'm going to go to a conference, an NCSL, National Council of State Legislators conference, in April. The president recommended that I go to that. It deals with rural health workforce issues specifically, and I'm going to talk about that and bring back information. But this is a great time to see what is going on in the area that you've just discussed. Now, what I would like to have is a list of those agencies and groups that are discussing what do we call what you're talking about? The
Mr. Chairman, I'm
community
not sure
development.
The bill has a name yet, but I'll get you whatever we have at that point.
Well, and what I'd like to do is call NCSL after we discuss this and ask them to provide some information, because that is a great opportunity where people from all over the country, the states and the feds, and people come and talk about some of the things that are in the planning stage, and that would be a really good time to gather the information. So we'll talk about that. Good. Thank you very much. Barry, would you like to continue?
I'll start.
Start
and,
over.
Feel free to ask questions.
Okay.
Want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to actually talk about these issues prior to the work that will be done on 1061 and that will come back to the legislature in January of 2009. I think that the first thing to do is to once again frame the issue so that it clearly is on the record. James referenced the demographics that we've all talked about. And I think that unless you really sit down and drill into the detail of that, the average person doesn't understand just how profound the demographic changes are going to be over the next 30 years or so. In last week's disappointing revenue forecast, there is a section in the revenue forecast on demographics. Mm-hmm. And it clearly showed that virtually all of the growth in Oregon's population is going to be in the 60-plus population and the 80-plus population. And that, in fact, younger age cohorts are either going to not grow at all or grow at a much, much slower rate than the general population. There's another demographic trend that also helps frame this issue, and that's longevity. People are living longer than they've ever lived before. And we know from research that's been done for many, many years that 80 is kind of the demarcation line. If you live longer than 80, you have better than a 50% chance that you're going to need significant long-term care. And the longer you live, the more those odds go up. Living longer is a good thing. It beats the alternative. But it does present challenges to us as a society in a variety of ways.
Now, excuse me. There are a lot of people that would disagree that it beats the alternative, because there are those people who are in their 80s, 90s, approaching 100, who would like an alternative, and living is not one of them. And so that's another interesting point. If people are going to live longer, we have to guarantee that it's a quality of life.
That's one of the things that the new front door speaks to.
Yeah.
And as I get into some of the detail, I'll emphasize those points. The other issue we have is in this state, our long-term care system is linked with individuals with physical disabilities. And that population, due to medical and pharmaceutical advances that have occurred over the last 20 years, also has had their life expectancy extended significantly from what it was many years ago. There are people who live every day now with disabilities that people used to die from in their 20s. And that population is also part of what we do in this state, not necessarily at the national level, because those are state-by-state choices. But in this state, that population is also included. And there are estimates from the Census Bureau that approximately 10% of the general population has a disability of one kind or another. And if you look at Oregon's population of about 3.7 million people, that would be 370,000 people in this state that might be disabled enough to require long-term care services at some point or another. And that's on top of about 475,000 seniors. So that group together represents close to a quarter of Oregon's population right now. And then as you look at the future demographics, it becomes a much larger share of the total state population. So approaching this issue in a proactive sense, approaching this in a preventive sense, approaching this as investments in future cost avoidance is, I think, smart government. This is the kind of stuff I think we should be doing to look down the road, as James said, and somehow get at that pre-Medicaid, pre-spend-down population before they're public welfare clients and work with them. So to frame the issue, the area agencies on aging are the operators of the aging system in this state at the rubber meets the road level. In most parts of the state, we're also the operators of the long-term care system. So we're in a unique position because we have daily contact with thousands of clients to know the unmet needs and the gaps in the system, because people approach us on a daily basis for things we're not able to do. Oregon has done a fabulous job of developing the best Medicaid long-term care program in the country. And we were a pioneer in that starting 25 years ago. I think we have an opportunity now to once again be a national pioneer, because no state has gone where the new front door would take us, which is a comprehensive system of services and information, mini case management, assistance, navigation through the system for the non-Medicaid population.
The new front door, no state has gone. That's kind of a Star Trek.
Yeah, it is kind of a Star Trek metaphor. I guess.
Or no state has gone before.
You can feel free to use that.
Okay.
So it is an opportunity for us. The whole model of the new front door is grounded in what we know to be the case for most non-Medicaid folks. What they need is high-quality information and, underlined in big capitals, assistance with navigating the system, arranging care, those kinds of things. What they don't necessarily need, in many cases, and can be deferred and delayed for a long time, is for us, meaning the state, the public purse, to pay the care bill. That's a different concept. We see individuals every single day all over the state that can write the check themselves. Either the family can, the individual can, some combination of that for the actual care bill. But they haven't got a clue on where to go, how to arrange it, how much care someone needs, what's the appropriate place for someone to be. And what the new front door does is provide a portal into trained professionals who can navigate that murky stuff for people, many of whom, in the cases that we see, are the adult out-of-state children of people who live in Oregon.
Could you give an example of where that might exist right now in a local community?
It would be just about any community you could pick in the state. One of the most common entries into long-term care is through a fall.
Well, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I guess what I'm... And I know that in the city of Springfield, we have a Lamoille and Senior Center, and you go over there on a Saturday, and there are people there from law offices who talk with seniors about various things. I'm sure there might be people. But I guess what I'm... You raise an issue that I hadn't really thought of specifically is... The people who can afford to pay for the services but don't know where to go. Now,
and even when they find out where to go, once they're there, they don't have a clue about what they should be asking about.
Where is that happening?
It happens every day.
Well,
in just about every community.
Okay.
In the state.
Are we solving their problems by a single point of entry? And what I'm asking is, there any community that has that kind of service that they are currently providing, a new front door? They're already doing the new front door model that you're talking about.
We do a minimal amount of that through some of the Older Americans Act funding.
Okay, Kay, did you want to come up here for a minute?
That goes to what we call information and referral.
Okay.
What we're not able to provide in almost every part of the state is comprehensive assistance.
Okay. Kay, would you introduce yourself?
I'm Kay Metzger. I'm the director with Senior and Disabled Services Lane Council of Governments.
Now,
and
you're shaking your head.
Well, Mr. Chair, yes. In Lane County, we have a small amount of funding through the Older Americans Act to help people stay off of Medicaid. And we do a little bit of assistance for folks, but the demand is far greater than what we can meet, and there are gaps. Where family members, we just don't have the staff or the time to help the folks, and they don't know where to go. So there's definitely improvements that could be made through the system, through the central point of entry.
Ms. Chairman, I think Barry brought up something kind of passed over that I think is going to become more critical as we move forward, and that is seniors living in Oregon with adult children living someplace else, and those adult children are trying to navigate long distance to try to get services, and that's going to become more and more prevalent as time goes. So,
So there is some funding in the Older Americans Act to do that.
Very, very minimal funding.
So how would we do it if other kinds of? How we're going to implement something like this without additional state dollars is a question.
Well, the reality is that it requires an investment. But the argument I think most of us would make, and part of the work that hopefully we'll bring to you next January will include some actuarial estimates, we believe that this new front door model is a cost avoidance model, that it requires some investment, and then the investment pays off in the sense that your Medicaid costs, which are a huge driver in the budget, the state share and the federal share, they're huge drivers in both budgets, that your Medicaid costs get eased to some degree by the ability to work with people and have them do a smarter, better spend down, or have them stay in their own home longer than they might have stayed in their own home using their private funds. Those are cost avoidance mechanisms, and the reality is, and I think James has talked about this in prior hearings, there's a tilt line that once that line tilts and nursing home admissions increase, because that's the big cost driver, the state has to spend that money anyway, because it's an entitled service. If you can move that tilt line down or closer to parallel, you avoid the bigger costs while also serving people in the way that they would prefer to be served, which is to stay in their own home community and hopefully their own home for as long as they possibly can. And so you get a win-win. You get some cost avoidance, and you're meeting the needs of the people who would approach the system for service in a way that they find much more pleasing.
Okay. What I would like to try to do, at least in Lane County, where we do have 100% access, I would like to try to develop a model where we had volunteer insurance people, volunteer professionals who would come in and spend some time doing this very thing. Now that is something that what I'm trying to, I would like to be able to show is that this model does work in some communities who have already organized to try to provide these at no additional cost to the state. You can't do it all, though, but at least demonstrate that this makes sense. Okay.
Mr. Chair, with 100% access through United Way in Lane County, they have had some success. And even before they received the $1 million grant to do the all of the work that they've done with the safety net for health care, we worked with a group and kind of actually organized it, working with United Way for the Medicare Part D implementation, where we pulled together different kinds of community partners, and actually in Lane County really had a good strategy to help seniors manage that new piece of benefit through Medicare, and collaborated with the senior centers and other senior agencies, home health agencies, and did a pretty good job of collaboration. So that is a good example of what a community can do.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think a key component what James was talking about is if there is a shift in resources at the federal level, that could be a key component. I guess the unknown at this point is whether it would be formula dollars or grant dollars, and one could almost hope they were formula dollars, except if they're grant dollars, then it's match and it probably is a bigger pot, but. I think that's going to be a key component for moving into this sort of thing. Clearly, we're much more successful at putting state resources into something that's a match rather than just straight state funded. So I think our ability to track the progress of that is going to be key as we're moving forward. So,
yeah, I think it's clear, to follow up on Senator Cruz's remarks, it's clear at the federal level that there's been a realization, and this has been worked on by the actuaries at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, that you have to access that pre-Medicaid spend-down population early in order to get some control of the budget drivers in the long-term care side that are going to happen through these changing demographics. We know that a huge number of people enter different types of facilities as private pay, do their spend-down, and then become Medicaid clients. Most of those individuals are doing that on their own without any navigation, help, any planning for how those resources could possibly be used more wisely because they're not eligible for Medicaid. And once they become, once they're already in the facility and all their money's gone, then the transition to Medicaid is more of a financial eligibility determination and a switch in who writes the check to the facility every month. But the opportunity to have planned the use of those private resources in a more organized, planned, measured way to stretch out over a longer period of time has already been lost. And much of what this concentrates on, this concept, which is heavily based in a federal initiative that started about 5 years ago and has been grant funded in 43 states. It's called an Aging and Disability Resource Center that acknowledges that that pre-Medicaid, pre-spend-down population is where you need to focus if you're going to achieve cost avoidance in long-term care. And the new front door concept builds on the idea that not only is that smart in the sense of the public purse, it's exactly what people want. People want to help their own families. 80% of the care in the United States is provided through informal family caregivers before people ever see the publicly funded systems. But most people don't have a way to navigate everything that goes on there, and then often are dealing with crises that they're ill-equipped to handle, and they make lousy decisions. A system like this, which would be marketed and publicized, which would exist in every community in the state, over a reasonable period of time, people would become aware that this is where you go when you need assistance for an elder or a person with a disability, and you can get hands-on, real assistance.
Okay. Now, we're talking wraparound care.
Yes.
Okay. That includes reverse mortgages. It includes
long-term
care insurance. Yes. It includes, and that's what I think is very, very important, is that we look at the full spectrum of needs and services available, and that we work with the people who provide that, the financial institutions, the insurance companies, that they are part of the mix, and that people, particularly with the mortgage thing, people, kind of scary, but to make sure that people have the right advice and what, you know, what a reverse mortgage is and when it would be beneficial and not. But see, I'm looking at government in this sense more as a facilitator to something that is already organized in a sense, and what I'm hoping we can do is identify the pieces and kind of organize them and get them all bundled, and then when 09 comes along saying, okay, this is what we have done, and we have brought people together, we've, you know, volunteers and others, now this is what we need to make it happen even more, particularly in rural communities. That, you know, it's easy to do in some counties. It's a piece, you know, it's easy because the pieces are there.
Mr. Chair, the AAAs and SPD have already begun to do some of that work as part of an offshoot of the annual planning that the area agencies on aging do to identify gaps in the system and unmet needs in the system. Next month, James has scheduled a meeting with a broader array of stakeholders to begin the discussion about bringing all those pieces together.
What meeting is that?
Mr. Chairman, as part of the long-range planning process and as part of Senate Bill 1061, we need to and want to involve all of our stakeholder communities in the planning process. So even though we have a variety of work groups working on specific parts of the plan, we're going to convene representatives of all our stakeholder groups to map out the entire process, what input sessions we're going to have, public hearings, meetings around the state leading up to submission of the plan to you all in July or August of this year.
I'm impressed. That's great, because those are the things that we had talked about doing, and that's
great. That's right on. That's why there was no fiscal on the panel.
Well, and that's going to be the other interesting discussion there is no fiscal on that part of it, because that's something that you had been working on planning to do. It does relate to budget notes and so on, and we've had a number of meetings, and so I'm glad to hear that we're getting started on that. Now, what meeting did you have with your AAA groups?
Oh, each year, the Area Agency on Aging directors have what we call an annual planning meeting, and the core purpose of that meeting is to look at where the aging and long-term care systems sit and what's missing, what are the problems, what are the gaps, what can we do to run a better system.
Could you give us a geographic distribution of your groups?
Yes, there are 17 area agencies in the state. They cover all of the counties. They are a variety of configurations, from being part of county government to being multi-county consortiums to nonprofit organizations that serve multiple counties or a single county. They all share the designation under federal law of Area Agency on Aging. What all of us, all 17 of us, share is operating the Older Americans Act programs and Oregon Project Independence. Mostly in the Valley Corridor from Portland to Eugene, the agencies
And to Roseburg, too, right?
Yes, and down to Roseburg.
That's part of the corridor.
Agencies also either directly operate the Medicaid long-term care program for seniors and people with disabilities, or oversee that program.
In fact, I, when I was a member of LCOG and mayor of Springfield, I spoke at the COG in Roseburg, and it was at Wildlife Safari, and it was in the evening. And just about when I was partway through my speech, the lions started to roar. And so I very quickly finished. But it was feeding time. But I remember going to Roseburg to do that. What I would like to have, what would be helpful for us, is some information about the... And I may already have that somewhere, but the geographic, do you have that on a map? Do you
yes.
have that? Okay.
Yes.
If I could have that
sure.
before tomorrow, that would be great, because I may use that, or at least have it as part of the floor presentation, and distribute that to reference. That's
a good idea.
Yeah, that we are dealing statewide
yes.
on these issues, and that the planning groups have been set up and so on.
We can get you there.
Yeah, that would
very
be
easily.
Good.
Again, I want to emphasize the opportunity that this concept represents, which is for Oregon to once again be a pioneer in doing something in a statewide sense that no state has done. We were the first state back in 1981 to begin to use dollars that prior to that had always been used for institutional care for home care. And every other state has followed us in that sense. And now we have an opportunity to become the first state to combine a Medicaid long-term care system.
Was that you?
Okay, that goes. I'm sorry.
Yes, we have the opportunity to become the first state to combine the most fully developed Medicaid system with a fully developed system for those individuals who are either never going to be on Medicaid or their entry into Medicaid can be significantly delayed. These pathways to help are precisely what our non-public welfare constituents are looking for. They're looking for the kind of help that would assist them in assuring that the care of an elder or someone with a disability is arranged in a way where they have the confidence that everything that should be done is being done and that the money that they're spending is being spent wisely and well. I think that as we further develop this, we'll be able to bring you more detail about exactly what's involved, what resources it would take, and certainly if the federal government does go through with what James spoke about, it would provide a huge opportunity to jumpstart this.
It's incredibly helpful.
Okay. We'd like to have the agency, Ms. Mullenkamp, would you come up, please? And Scott, would you come up? Yeah. Oh, Kate, stay, please. Yeah. Well, no, I want to hear from the directors of the different geographic reasons right now.
He just likes ordering people around.
Yeah,
you know, it's
now, is there another director out there that...
There's a whole bunch of directors.
How many of you are directors? Oh, wow. Okay, well, let's start here then, and let's just kind of get a sense of where you guys are in your group. I would like each of you to be able to come up and identify yourselves and speak to your issues. That's wonderful. I didn't realize that there was... Yeah, okay. Okay, Scott.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Senator Cruz, my name is Scott Bond, and I'm the Director of Senior and Disability Services through Cascades West Council of Governments, and our agency serves Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties. And I suppose that I can try to talk over that or in between it.
I think we're going to try to fix that right
okay.
now. Go ahead.
So our agency, much as Barry has described, we do all of the same functions in terms of managing the Older Americans Act, the OPI program, and the long-term care system through Medicaid. Our system in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln has certainly been hit with probably not a unique situation, but a more public situation regarding some of the loss of our community-based care beds, specifically the Spencer House experience in Newport, and trying to see what we might be able to do to help with the community-based care rates to stop some of that gradual withdrawal from the system. And this new front door concept, we have a very hardworking, dedicated group of people in our offices who are doing the best that they can with all of the requests that they get. But we really don't have as Barry described it, a system that is able to address the unique needs of every single person who asks for help. We have tens of thousands of calls, requests for help every year of our staff, and we are able to do some things for people when they kind of fit into the right box of something that's out there for them. And if they happen to meet the criteria for either OPI or the long-term care system, we can provide them with something like that. But a lot of the questions and the complexities of family situations that come to our staff's attention, and in fact, people call me directly and say, you know, here's my family situation. My mother has this thing going on. We've been pitching in. We've been trying to pay for things to help band-aid a situation. We find that there isn't any direct program that will help us. We need somebody to help us navigate through the system. And we do the best we can with those situations, but we're really at a disadvantage in terms of our staff time and the demand from our communities. We don't have the luxury of doing the full range of assistance that something like the New Front Door would give us. We don't have the consolidation of the kinds of programs that would forestall the enrollment into the Medicaid program that we would like to have that are described in this concept as Barry's described it.
Now, who are, Lane County United Way, they have been a partner in putting together 100% Access Health. You guys have a United, you have a United Way.
We have a couple of United Ways in our area. Uh-huh. And each United Way is very unique in terms of what they do and how they do it. Our United Ways have focused pretty exclusively on kids and young families and supporting those populations, and haven't really done the kind of thing that Kay described for Lane County. And each United Way Board of Directors gets to pick a set of priorities and a direction. There isn't any real agreement amongst them that I'm aware of.
No, Ms. Chair, for example, in Douglas County, the United Way's focus currently is on the meth epidemic, and that's where a lot of their resources. And to say that's the wrong focus is, it's hard to say.
It's not the wrong focus. Well, I guess what I was looking at is it would be, I think, important for each community to look to their, you know, whatever support groups, whatever other organizations, and there's a variety that might step in to partner, you know, with this particular program. So. Yes.
And Mr. Chair, that's where the Area Agencies on Aging would be best suited to really spearhead that, because our focus is on aging and disability issues. So and I think that's where this design with the New Front Door works so well.
Okay. Go ahead.
Chairman Morissette and Senator Cruz, I am Vicki Nienkamp. I'm the Area Agency on Aging Director for Douglas County, and we have similar issues. I was thinking, as you were talking about volunteers, Douglas County has a huge cadre of senior volunteers,
mm-hmm.
over 900 active volunteers.
Wow.
We have a very large and well-trained cadre of SHEBA volunteers who work with the Medicare Part D and the variety of services, prescription assistance and all. However, we receive more calls than we can possibly serve and respond to appropriately. And with this New Front Door, as we have or are beginning to propose it and design it, would provide a set of specialists who could answer some of those initial calls and who could help supply, because they would be well trained to receive these kinds of calls and know what the services are, mm-hmm. to begin to help those families in the initial phases. Then they would refer them back to us in the local community, where we begin to navigate each local area,
mm-hmm.
Because we know that area. So we're very excited about the possibilities. We simply will not be prepared to respond with the onslaught of seniors coming.
Well, and that raises the question of how we support the volunteer groups with a coordinator, because if you really want to take advantage of volunteers, there has to be some coordination.
Absolutely.
And the state, you know, the RSVP program, the ombudsman program. I know there are not enough. I talked to the Lane County ombudsman, and they just kind of shake their heads and said, we have 5 or 6 people. We can't possibly visit all these nursing homes, mm-hmm. and all these facilities. We just possibly can't do it. You know, so. Mm-hmm. And I know that during budget time that those programs come up, you know, for funding, and just the RSVP program and among others. And so that's where we have to look for funding to facilitate the community volunteer groups.
And we're already hurting with the lack of dollars for OPI, which is very seriously concerning us. And we're hoping that, we've got to find a way to increase the in-home services that we can provide to our seniors to keep them out of the system.
Okay, one of the things that I think needs to happen very quickly with OPI, 2 weeks ago, and the Ways and Means Committee met, and they were being presented. James was presenting the agency request for the rebalance money, and Nicole Parmelier, Williams, I think. Anyway, she gave me a heads up on another issue of taking $400,000 of existing general fund money out of OPI and putting it back into the ending balance. Now, when OPI was funded by the senior tax deferral program, it was not intended to be the sole source of funding. At least that the legislation did not intend that. Somehow, leadership, Ways and Means people thought that, gee, we don't have to put general fund money into that anymore. So the only general fund money... The only general fund money is actually the $400,000 that goes to fund the support groups. And we don't want to take that away. I don't know if they're going to take it away. My request was, please don't do it in the middle of the biennium. Don't do it now. Let's talk about it in 2009. So that $400,000 may be at risk. You know, I'm not sure. We don't know if they would put that in the ending balance and save that for other things. But you might keep that in mind and talk to Nicole and talk with Barry, and you might be contacting your legislators about that specific item, $400,000, mm-hmm. to remain in OPI.
Mm-hmm. Which is a ways down from where we came into the session hoping to be.
Oh, yeah. So we wanted $4 million. Now we're fighting to keep $400,000. Okay. Other issues that you want to discuss? Okay.
Well,
yes. Okay.
Mr. Chair, just a comment about Lane County.
Okay. Identify yourself one more time.
Faye Metzger, Senior and Disabled Services, Lane Council of Government.
Okay.
We're one of those agencies that are a transfer agency, so we do serve the Medicaid population for seniors and people with disabilities. And with that money, we serve probably about 5%, we figure, of the senior population on Medicaid. However, our budget to serve the other 95% of the population in Lane County that's not on Medicaid is very small. It's probably only 10 or 15% of our budget to serve the rest of the population. So we really are in the same kind of situation as the others, where we work with a lot of people through the Family Caregiver Program and through OPI, those folks who are impaired, who need just a little bit of help, and with that little bit of help can truly stay off of Medicaid and prevent further costs to the state. So just wanted to point that out.
Ms. Chair, I mean, it seems simple that for a lot of these folks, all we need is somebody to show them where to go on the roadmap. You know, it seems simple. We just got to get people's attention to it and build a case. We have, Ms. Chair, about 10 months to do that.
Good. Thank you. Nicole Armstrong, would you please come up? Paul Matera Armstrong. And I would like to have two other area agencies come up as well. So would two of you come up? Nicole, I would like you to just touch a minute on that issue that we just talked about.
Sure. Senator Morissette, Senator Cruz. For the record, my name is Nicole Armstrong. I'm here representing O4AD, the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. The issue that Senator Morissette is referring to in regards to Project Independence, in the rebalance that was submitted by the Department of Human Services, there was a technical correction that needed to be made to basically clean up accounting lines in how home care worker adjustments that are made, which happened after the session, are taken care of. The department has always taken care of this. It is not something that has come out of Project Independence. It's never been an issue. However, they were working to clean up accounting lines. Because of that, when LFO took a view of the rebalance, somehow it seemed to be misinterpreted as an additional appropriation to OPI, which it is not. In the LFO analysis of the rebalance, they recommended disappropriating the $400,000 adjustment that DHS had put into there to take care of this. And if that, in fact, were the case and there was no other way to take care of this bill that's out there, then the money would have to come from the current allocation to Project Independence. And at $400,000 times $253 a month times clients, it's about 133 people. So we are working to find a solution to that allows for that bill to be taken care of, and other funds can come from the OPI trust fund. It can come from those tax deferral dollars, as long as it doesn't touch the current appropriation that we have. So that's the issue, as best as I can explain it. It's technical and way above my head, but that's the issue that we're trying to get to a solution for.
And that is the only remaining general fund money that is general fund money?
It is general fund dollars, Chair Morissette, because it's kind of an in and out of dollars. So it was intended to just take care of this adjustment, not to impact services at all. And it wouldn't either way. But if it isn't corrected in the rebalance, then it will impact services because we're going to have to ante up that money somewhere. It's a bill that has to be paid.
Well, and I guess it's important that we continue to talk with the coach. Now, is this a Ways and Means decision, ultimately?
Chair Morissette, it is a Ways and Means decision, and it can be a Ways and Means correction. And that's what we're working for, to make sure that there is the appropriate language inserted into the rebalance that gives the department the authority to draw down the other funds from the tax deferral if we need to correct this and not just kind of leave the bill dangling out there.
Okay. Well, the reason I mention this, this is an excellent group of directors that might also give input to their legislators and Ways and Means people. That would be important.
Chair Morissette, I absolutely agree, and I'm sure that they all are going to.
Okay, but do they have the necessary details?
I believe so.
Good. Well, that's great. Then that's something that needs to be done expeditiously. So put that on your to-do list. Good. Thank you.
Whether it will be heard is an
Okay, let's go ahead and...
My name is Margaret Davidson. I'm the Director of Community Connection of Northeast Oregon, and I represent the east side of the state, Baker, Grant, Union, and Wallowa counties. We are one of those private nonprofit agencies serving seniors that Barry referred to, one of them that only does Older Americans Act and Oregon Project Independence programs. We do not administer the Medicaid programs. So the only state dollars that we receive to serve seniors is Oregon Project Independence and then a small amount of Older Americans Act money. In my area, we're a little higher than the state average with the percentage of seniors, around 20 to 23%. So I have about 13,000 seniors spread across 13,000 square miles. So that's another challenge when it comes to serving the region. Without those big Medicaid dollars, we do operate on a very limited budget for senior services. And the new front door that we're talking about is really just what we're seeing people come to us for. And like others have said, we get calls from out-of-state children for seniors who live in our areas. I see some of my own staff struggling with caregiving issues and aging issues for their parents, and this new front door would help address, all of that. It's just the information system without a lot of services tied to it. It's kind of a hand-holding, this is how you get it done. And then we all faced it with my parents. Eventually we all go through it. Mm-hmm. And usually until you are faced with it and have to make some choices and educate yourself, you're not aware of the system that's out there. So I think this would build the structure that we as a state need to address our future of our seniors and the boomers, the children also.
I'm sorry if I missed the city that you're from.
My headquarters is in LeGrand, okay. But we have offices in Enterprise, Wallowa, Baker City, and John Day.
Okay. You don't go as far south as, or Ontario, that's a different...
No, area. Ontario is another agency, and so is Burns. Sorry, I have the four counties, but there's one further east.
And you have some small clinics is, NISA? No, that's not.
No, NISA's in Ontario.
Let's see, Union or?
Union. Union, Elgin, Imbler,
What's the status of the Elgin Union clinics?
The health clinics for OHSU. They're struggling.
I know, yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. One of them, you're forming a district in Elgin, I believe?
Elgin. In fact, one of my staff is the mayor of Elgin, and she has just kind of taken the bull by the horns and established a committee to do a lot of planning, and Carmen has bought a little time from OHSU to forestall the closure of that clinic and trying to establish a healthcare district to save that clinic. So, yeah.
We have a bill that's before Ways and Means that would be a repayment of expenses within a 45-day period. There's a...
Rather than 345.
Yeah, there's... let's see. $500,000 fiscal.
Which is bogus.
Well, the fiscal, according to Representative Maurer, who owns a clinic in Medford, right in the Medford area, mm-hmm. said that... About 90% of that is money that is owed to the clinic. So the fiscal that they're saying is, we have, you mean you want $500,000 of general fund money? No, we want $450,000 of money that should go to the clinics to start with. We want you to give it to them this biennium.
Already been there.
Yeah, so that's going to be our approach to the Ways and Means Committee, is that this is money that really doesn't belong to the state. It's technically general fund money, but it's money that has been collected in their... There's a very long time period. We want it to turn around in 45 days.
Well, the state loses the big, so that's...
So, yeah. So anyway,
yeah, that's
and
my area.
So
that's
Union, Elgin, and there are then probably other clinics. Now, Dr. Hoffman is the mayor of
Baker,
mm-hmm. and
Baker City.
And he. He's obviously active in healthcare. Well, obviously he's a physician, but mm-hmm.
I don't know how active he is in the Union and Elgin clinics, though. I mean, in all those politics, since it's a different county, I'm not aware of that.
But John Day is in your...
John Day is in my region, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have programs that operate in about 9 senior centers. And this is that's our focal point is for meals and for information and assistance and transportation. It's resources are so slim out there that we really are the go-to agency for seniors.
We visited it was between the in the 01 interim, I believe. Senator Cruz, myself, Senator Fisher was the chair of the Senate committee at the time, Sumter, great place. Sumter.
Oh, yeah. That's
yeah,
in Bakersfield.
We had a meeting in Sumter.
Well, come back.
And they had they raised their money with a big bake sale once a year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, they have the huge flea market over
big bake sale
Fourth of July, I think
to
it is,
support
yeah.
your health care. Your ambulance is what they raised it for.
Yeah. So come back. We'll take you anywhere you want to go.
Let me know when the bake sale takes place and we'll...
Well, you'll be back.
We were in Granite, too.
So. Oh, yeah. There's like three people in Granite. Seriously, the population.
Yeah. Three people.
It's
right.
really small.
Okay, Fossil, is that part of yours?
That's in Grant County. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank God for the Bowerman Foundation, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's seriously, we do have about 13,000 seniors, and my region is 13,000 square miles. Mm-hmm. So it's,
one per mile,
I mean,
it works for you well.
And 13,000 tough miles in the wintertime.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. And it's been a tough winter.
Yeah.
Lots of snow, lots of winds, lots of road closures.
Okay. Would you like to? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Morrison and Senator Cruz, I'm Mary Shortall. I'm the Director of the Aging and Disability Services Division in Multnomah County.
Oh.
And we're the, as a AAA, I represent about 90,000 seniors and about 50,000 people with disabilities. And we also, I echo everything that my colleagues have said today about the need for the new front door. One of the things, though, I would say is that we also have a helpline or kind of an attempt to have a front door in our county. And we handle about 75,000 calls a year. And, you know, we have trouble keeping up with that, I have to say that. The one thing that I think you were asking about and that I think is important to understand is that also as the Area Agency on Aging, we don't try to replicate things. We try to create resources in the community, and so that is where the volunteers, you know, having volunteers is so important, but you really need the staffing and the help to do that. We've been lucky. We think we have about 9,000 home-delivered meal volunteers in our community and 22 meal sites. But we've been able to do that with the help of not-for-profits that, you know, we give them some Older Americans Act money as seed money, and they then go out and raise funding as well. And we're a larger, it's a larger community. It's a little easier to do that, but I do think in the rural parts of the state, there's just that much more need for the staffing and the ability to do that because we have a growing senior population and more needs throughout our community. So
now, loaves and fishes, that's your food sites?
That's correct. We contract with Loaves and Fishes to do the both the congregate meal sites and our home-delivered meals.
Mm-hmm.
And then they raise money and are able to help in finding the volunteers as well.
And you are intimately familiar with the senator from your district who is involved in the Ways and Means Committee and so on and so forth, right?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So you are in constant contact with her, right?
Right. And right. I would say that Senator Carter used to actually...
No, I didn't want to mention it.
Senator Carter used to actually manage the Oregon Project Independence Program when she served a short stint as the executive director of the Urban League, which was one of our contractors for the Oregon Project Independence.
Wow. Good.
Now, if Margaret can get over the shyness thing she has.
Yeah, well, you're working with her then to make sure that, well, to help her understand the need that we have and so on, which she does.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's... I think legislators and all of the districts... I think one of the problems is that a lot of our services are below the radar screen. There are so many other things going on. We had a meeting. You know, mental health is a huge issue. The mental health, you know, New State Hospital, we're looking at in Roseburg at regional. You know, you guys closed your hospital mental health facility. You know, yesterday we had a meeting on foster care kids and the problems, and that's a huge issue. So there are a lot of very, very burning issues out there that we need to deal with, and it's easy. I've always felt seniors are below the radar screen.
Mm-hmm.
They're the biggest voting block, but yet they're at least paid attention to. if we could come in with the same message that K-12, you know, education, kids, you know, I mean, that's what we have to do, is raise our visibility of the seniors and get our, you know, the needs of the population out. So anyway, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We need, let's see, who else is out there? Several more. Would you come up, please?
And also the Governor's Commission.
Okay. We may do the Governor's Commission. Please. I'll take one, two.
Do you know who's here?
Bob, sitting in the back there. Robert, see that guy back there with the yellow shirt?
Okay.
Hi. One of you, okay, introduce yourself, please.
I guess I'm the oldest of the three up here, so I guess he selected me. Yeah. Mike O'Brien, I'm the executive director of the Area Agency on Aging for Klamath and Lakes County. And we are a nonprofit agency. Our umbrella organization is the Klamath Basin Senior Citizens Council. And we receive state funding through Oregon Project or through OPI, and then of course we do the other Oregon Area Agency on Aging programs in Klamath County. The new front door would benefit organizations like us in the small rural communities because we don't have a lot of consistency with what they do in the other parts of the state because of lack of funding, lack of resources. We just don't have programs and services in small communities that they have in the larger metropolitan areas. So I can see the new front door is designing a process that helps all of us to be more consistent in what it is we provide and how we provide it. Very beneficial, I think, to the smaller communities. Our geographical area is about 17,000 square miles, and to try to provide services over that distance becomes almost impossible. I, too, receive a lot of phone calls from family members from other states who are checking on relatives within my counties, wanting to know what services are available and how they can access them. So those are important issues that confront us down in those parts of the state. Funding, of course, is always a concern with organizations like ours, and we do utilize a lot of volunteers in the programs that we provide and the services that we make available to seniors in our areas. We have roughly 170 volunteers associated with the Senior Center in probably 35 different areas, including exercise programs, wood carving, all kinds of activities and services. We have blood pressure testing, which is done by volunteer retired nurses who come in to do that. Our Meals on Wheels program, of course, is ran by all volunteer drivers. We have like seven sets of teams that go into our community and serve those meals every day at lunchtime. We have volunteers who assist us in our kitchens. We operate 10 locations for congregate meal sites between Lake County and Klamath County. So there's a lot of services that go out with very limited resources. We also raise money within our community to help us. We operate a bingo in Klamath County, which helps us generate roughly $100,000 a year that goes back into services and programs, and that's one of the reasons we're able to provide a little more services in some areas.
See, I think that's really good information because I think the point we want to get across to the legislature is that there are a lot of things going on that need. Everybody wants to be self-sufficient, but we need to be facilitating that. I think the state needs to be a facilitator to help people help themselves. And if we can promote the volunteer program and make sure we give money to the coordinators to get more volunteers and to coordinate, that's a huge...
It's also the resources, Senator Morissette, that they need. The ability to provide mileage, gas assistance to volunteers.
Yeah, that's right.
To be able, instances where they need tools and equipment in order to provide the service they're doing, to be able to buy those pieces of equipment so that they have even snow shovels during the winter months become a problem for some areas in buying them and giving them out to volunteers to be able to go out and shovel seniors and disabled sidewalks and roofs
now,
and that sort of thing.
Now, do you get grant money? You mentioned, well, you raise $100,000.
We are also partially funded under the United Way in Klamath County.
Okay.
And we receive about $60,000 from the United Way that assists us with senior transportation with our Meals on Wheels.
Okay.
We can't get assistance with the congregate meal side. We've tried that the last 7 or 8 years through United Way, but they don't see that as the highest priority. They do see Meals on Wheels and transportation as higher. We also receive some county funds. I'm very fortunate that we receive a little over $50,000 from Klamath County. However, with the timber revenue being where it is, we may lose that this coming year, which is going to certainly impact us. But I think for the small rural communities, we learn to do things a lot differently than a lot of other areas within the state, just for survival reasons. And we learn how to battle for dollars locally in order to make it happen.
Well, you have two great representatives, Doug Whitsitt and Bill Girard, and I've worked very well with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that would be very helpful for each of the area counties, organizations, is to kind of give an overview of what you're doing, and it would be helpful to get it to us as a committee, but it would be helpful to get it to your representatives so we know that your representatives have that information, and so I can sit down with Doug Whitsitt and say, hey, Doug, this is what you guys need down there. He might be surprised that we have that information, you know, and he may not have that information, but there is that gap that exists that we're trying to overcome and coordinate. So I think kind of an overview would be very helpful for you guys to prepare to get to us and then to get to your representative, so we're all talking about the same thing. So when we stand up on the floor in committee and go to Ways and Means, that we have all of that stuff at hand and we can make handouts and so on.
I do work extremely close with both Senator Whitsitt and State Representative Bill Girard. In addition, I do work with Representative George Gilman. And I have provided them with materials that help them to better understand the problems that we're confronted with in Klamath County. And
I'm
sorry that they haven't shared that with you.
No, I think that what happens is that, for one thing, people are very, very busy. Not everyone is involved with the Health and Human Services committees.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have an opportunity oftentimes to get together and talk about these things. But what Senator Cruz and I and others would do is call together a kind of – we have a long-term care caucus. Now, I had never really – you know, we will invite both Senator Whitsitt and Representative Girard to sit in with us at a meeting, and we will call together representatives from the different areas and to talk about this specifically during this interim, to talk about our planning process. I worked with Senator Whitsitt on he went to the Supreme Court. I sat in a Supreme Court hearing over the power plant issue in Klamath County. It took 2 years and $200,000 for him to bring that case to the Supreme Court. And they lost the case, but they made some interesting points about how power plants are sited by the Department of Energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked very closely with Doug. We had a bill that flew through the Senate. It didn't go anywhere in the House. That was in 205. So we've worked on that particular issue. But I think that they don't know if I can go to Doug and say, gee, Doug, I know that you got all this information. Let's sit down and talk about it. That's what I'm getting at, is once we have that and once they have it, then that opens up a whole new line of communication.
Okay. No, if you find that he doesn't have that anymore, he needs to let me know that. Doug and I work very closely together at the local level, and he's very much concerned about seniors, not only in our area, but throughout the state, as is Representative Girard. Of course, Representative Girard, last time around, I think, chaired the Human Service Committee on the House side, and was very active at that point. And he still remains pretty active in helping to support Oregon Project Independence and other issues affecting seniors. So I would be really surprised if either one of them didn't have materials they could share.
I'm sure
with
they
you.
Do.
Yeah, and I hope, and I will encourage them to do that, because I think they need to be doing that.
Well, and I guess it would be more helpful for us to have your information so we have
common
ground to discuss. And I know that Bill Girard was a county commissioner for years, and I remember when he was on our health committee on the House side, and we talked about tuberculosis and so on, and he said, well, you know, we spent our entire budget of $16,000 because there was one gentleman that had TB, and we had to get the sheriff to I remember that. So
he's a transient.
I appreciate the time you've given me to speak to you.
Thank you,
Senator Morissette and Senator Cruz. My name's Don Bruland. I'm Director of Senior and Disability Services for the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, which serves Jackson and Josephine counties. I guess I have the honor of being the longest-serving director. This is my 32nd year as director. And in that time, I've had the privilege of being part of the birthing of First Oregon Project Independence, later the Oregon System of Services, the Oregon model, which emphasizes keeping people in their own homes, really is one of those great win-wins in our society. That is, it gives people what they want, and it saves taxpayers' dollars. I'm really proud of what we have accomplished so far. The problem is that over the past few years, the system has been unraveling. And, in fact, it's going to cost us more money if we don't do something now to stop that unraveling. And I think that's what we've been discussing today. First, of course, to make it so that we don't lose any more of our facilities and our community-based facilities that are less expensive than us placing people in nursing homes. And we've seen in the last year something unprecedented. That is a fairly rapid growth in nursing home populations. So we do need to shore up the system now. Second, we have to build a system that assists all Oregonians to realize their desire to remain as independent as possible and to not go on Medicaid. It has been my experience that most seniors and most people with disability end up on Medicaid because they have no other choices. The fact of the matter is, most individuals, as Barry pointed out earlier, are cared for by family, friends, spouses. But the trouble is, they're out there alone. And without some assistance, they finally wear out. We have an opportunity, I think, with the new front door of giving people the assistance they want. And at the same time, we're going to end up saving dollars. I mean, the old, you know, it always gets pointed out, the old Fram oil commercial. Pay me now or pay me later, and pay me a lot more. And that's what this is all about. We've got to develop that system, and we know what it looks like because we've looked at other states. We've looked at what we've been able to do with the very small amounts of Older Americans Act funds. We know that it can work.
The key is that we have to scale it up so that it really does stem the tide of people who are going to need very expensive long-term care services. And when you think, there's also a parallel at the personal level to what I was saying, pay me now or pay me later. Because, in fact, we lose if we overinvest, that is, pay for services that are too expensive and that are really not necessary. But I've also seen that we pay highly when we underinvest. That is, when the individual does not realize that they do need some assistance, they keep trying to hold on to the resources they have, and as a result, they end up deteriorating rapidly and having to use all of their resources on expensive care. And once we took out some of our lower levels of service that we were doing for the levels 14 through 17, we started creating that. We need to now rebuild that back, and we need to rebuild it, quite frankly, hopefully with Medicaid funds. But whether or not there are Medicaid funds, we need to build it, because we cannot afford as a state not to do that. And that's the thing I am most convinced of from my work over these years, is we have to help people realize their ambitions, which is, once again, to stay independent as possible, and two, to stay off Medicaid. Because quite frankly, they don't want to go through the paperwork. They don't want the their resources later to have to go back to the state rather than to their children. And they'll do almost anything. But they need assistance. And that, quite frankly, volunteers can be a key part of it. But it also takes the knowledge of professionals who have been well-trained, who understand the system, have seen all of the different problems that are out there and all of the different ways you can meet them, and can give them that guidance and say, hey, here's what you can do. And if you do this, actually, you're going to be better off. You're going to be happier. And that's the type of investment we make. Where we've seen this investment make some of its biggest impressions is, quite frankly, in a program that isn't currently funded other than a small amount of Medicaid and a small amount of OPI, that's our home delivered meals program. We see people remaining in the community with no other assistance but that, who really do probably need a lot of other services, but they're determined to stay there. We need to help them stay there. And this new front door offers us that opportunity. And once again, if we don't do it, it's pay me now or pay me later and pay me a lot more. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz, my name is Jeff Hill. I'm the Director of Washington County Disability, Aging, and Veteran Services. What the new front door, I believe, means is that across the state, you're going to have a uniformity of services, that no matter where a senior or a person with disabilities is located or lives, that they have the same level of access to the services within their community across the state. I think it's a small investment to ensure that all Oregonians have that funding and available services to them. And I also don't, as an area agency on aging, I don't see myself as the direct service provider. I see myself as the planner and the coordinator to find the community services and resources to provide those services. Yeah. If, for example, we contract with for our nutrition programs with Loaves and Fishes also. Mm-hmm. We also work with nonprofits in our county to set up conservatorship, guardianship, money management services. We use volunteers for our SHEBA program. We're currently starting what we call Project Reach, which is an information and outreach service where we're going to use volunteers to go out into the community to provide one-on-one counseling and access to services and attempt to be that, for a short time period, risk intervention for an individual who needs to get into the system, and they're going to be the person who's going to lead them through that system. I think that is our role within our community. And I think that this new system that we're looking at is going to only enhance those abilities of the local area agencies on aging to continue to provide those services in our areas.
That's great. Loaves and Fishes, I know they have, do you know how many outlets they have?
In our county?
Well, throughout. How many in your county, for instance?
Well, in our county, I know they serve, we have 9 meal sites, and then they also provide the home-delivered meals.
Okay.
I do know Loaves and Fishes is in Multnomah County, Washington County, and Clark County.
Oh, okay. I know they're fairly extensive. Yeah. Okay. What kind of financial, who do you partner with for that?
We're actually part of the county government.
No,
for Loaves and Fishes?
No. Did you mention that for financial advice and counseling and so on?
We partner with, for the conservatorship, guardianship, money management services.
Yeah.
We contract with a nonprofit known as Senior Gap, and it's kind of based out of the Forest Grove Senior Center within our county. And we're currently working with them to, as a matter of fact, we'll hopefully hear today that we have successfully received a grant from our community block grant program to expand those services within our county.
Okay. That is a nonprofit. Yeah. One of the things that we're trying to do with rural Oregon is some opportunity grants that we would create. Is that, you have a, when you passed a bill that established the program,
mm-hmm.
but did we ever have any money in it?
Of course not.
Could you talk a little bit about that program? Because I think it's a relevant program to our discussion right now.
I'd like to step back a little bit to I think something we need to get some hard data on. Because I remember the fight we had over reducing or eliminating levels 14 through 17, we had a win inside of a loss because the original proposal was to go to 11, and we were able to keep it up to 14. But we also knew at the time that it was that a lot of the folks that were being kicked out would be reclassified. And simply because at the upper levels they weren't, you know, doing probably the due diligence that they could have to get them reclassified lower because they were covered. But then there was also a significant number of folks who, as soon as the services stopped, would their condition would deteriorate to the point where they were reclassified for cause. And I think that is probably... If we can have some good data on the result of that action, you know, because we're talking cause and effect here, and we're talking about if we can't, I mean, this fits right into the fact that we better take care of these folks, give them services pre-Medicaid, and this it's speaking to the same thing, and that sort of data, Mr. Chair, would be.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got the history already there. We know the impacts of what we did, and some numbers on that, I think, would be...
I think we can get you some of that data. The other thing is, what I've seen is two phenomena. One, of course, is the people who actually, and there is some data on, who come back onto Medicaid immediately. Mm-hmm. But the other is an interesting one, and that is, quite frankly, before we made those cuts... When you looked at our OPI population that was served, they almost mirrored exactly the Medicaid population and how many at what levels.
Mm-hmm.
After those cuts, more and more of those lower-level people came back on OPI, but that's forced us, because we didn't get more OPI. In fact, it continued to be constricted both by not increases but by inflation, that now we have more like... 50% of ours people, 50-60%, I think, are in that those lower categories. But that means we couldn't serve some of the other people, and we're quite frankly going to be telling them it's not available. You really need to look at Medicaid, which you probably qualify for. Or you're going to spend down and get on Medicaid. Whereas in the past, they would say, oh, I'll go with this, and my family will help me this way and stuff, and I want to stay here. But, you know, as slots fill up, we just, you know, basically in our area, and I think most areas, we run a program whereby we say, you're on a list when somebody, and quite frankly, goes off of it, and they go off of it because they go on to Medicaid, or they go into a facility, or they die. It is not because all of a sudden they're miraculously well again.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I just quite honestly think that if we got experience data that could help inform our the legislature, and we do have it. We know cause and effect here, and if we're going to go to a new paradigm, and having that, I think helps inform the decision.
I think
process.
It would be helpful if you could formally request that from the Department of Human Services.
Oh, I think we can do that. Yeah.
Because that will mean that you will get it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there other directors here?
Thank you.
Okay. Ralph, would you come, please?
We got to listen to him.
Yeah, we're going to listen to him.
Okay.
Bob. Robert, would you come up? We have about 10 or 15 minutes left, and so you got about 2.5. No,
no, Mr. Chair, I'll rush mine. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, in this case representing Ask Me. However, I feel almost like I'm just lucky to be here today, so I really, really thank you. The background is that it was 75 when we passed 1975 Project Independence. I had the good fortune to chair that committee, and I hired a young lawyer out of your county named Ron Wyden. I had come out of the war on poverty.
So Ron Wyden knows the success.
So he'll say that when he's in meetings with me. Sometimes I want to forget it. Sometimes I'm thankful. I don't want to get into the background why I care about this. Secondly, I do want to claim an interest. My members are in Multnomah County, the case managers that do the work, not the home health care. That's SEIU. Mm-hmm. We're the case managers. We're the case managers in a good number of Barry's, but I also had some of the other counties. My interest is to reach solutions, and I feel almost very lucky because my God-given gift, I don't have the gifts most of you have, but there's one. I'm involved with a program now to solve the energy in public buildings. I have one on roads that the Senator Metzger and others are thinking. My gift is looking at a problem once I totally understand it, and this one I've been involved with, quite frankly, since I came out of U of O and worked in the War on Poverty and created the Clackamas County Senior Council. So I've been at this, frankly, all my life. I just had a hiatus for a while where I got into labor. I'd like to offer a couple suggestions, and then I'll close. Yeah. I know the problems. I've learned the problems. I've listened to the problems. Mm-hmm. The only comment I will make is it is going to require creativity. It's going to require thinking outside of the proverbial box. Mm-hmm. It's going to require courage, and I love the courage I saw in the press by you, Senator, on long-term care, and your Senator, mm-hmm. for the lead you've taken on this. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, it's going to require... I have a quote I made to myself I'd like to give to you. The new front door will help reduce institutional care cost of seniors, but also will keep the doors open for local schools, universities, mental health, and public safety. That's number one. Why do I say that? I've recommended that George Naughton, the state budget director, make the same presentation to you that he did to, I'm on the governor's revenue committee, and I'm also on the long-term finance committee of the state subcommittee, where he made the presentation that the biggest costs, the biggest crisis you face, and this was to business leaders of Oregon, you face the biggest cost is the cost of long-term care, and, quote, you have a window of opportunity to solve that. I made the quote I did to you first, then I documented and hope you will have him come in front of you with what he said to both our subcommittee and our long, and then our finance committee. But then I want to just comment on connect the dots that I had developed some years ago, and then I finally got some funding for a group that went out and taught the tax system in Oregon. The dots are, I'd ask people, if nothing else, read the Oregonian page front to end. And you will find every day there's a problem. You alluded to that. If it's everything from foster care to mental health. Mm-hmm. And I want people to connect the dots is that we have a broken revenue system in Oregon. Therefore, it leads me to my specific recommendation, and that is number three, that we develop a long-term independence the Long-Term Independence and Care Initiative. And that initiative will be funded as similar to Medicare Part D, but we'll call it E, thanks to John Mullen's idea. Mm-hmm. But rather than funding with me paying a little bit a month and business chipping in like we do on Medicare, the fact is I'm going to add a few bucks for independence because that's cheaper. That's a specific way to fund it. You don't have the funds in the general fund. You won't have the funds in the general fund because of Measure 5, Measure 47, mm-hmm. 50, 11. You know that. Some here may not. You do. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to talk about money to solve the problem, quite frankly, we need to become creative and courageous enough to say, what's the initiative we're going to take? And I, by the way, I love the fact you really are updating Project Independence. When I was handed that in 75, I knew nothing other than we had to reduce the institutional care costs because Bob Packwood got us the grant. We got the grant, hired the staff, wasn't state money. You could get a new grant now, by the way, on this through the feds. And we developed then to Congress what Project Independence has had more impact than just Oregon. What we did, I've wanted Project Independence updated, modernized, and quite frankly, you're now calling it the new front door to me. Mm-hmm. My funding source is your funding source, because if we don't get a handle, the only analogy I have is OHSU, the governor, 2 terms ago cut out $32 million from OHSU's budget. So you know I have 5,000 members in my union. I like my job. I didn't want to lose it. So the fact is, I told OHSU, you're doing this wrong. You frankly have contributed to the economy of this state in a great fashion. I want you to show the legislature quite specifically how many dollars you're putting in income tax into the general fund. They then did a one-pager, which I got out to legislators, and they were using it on the floor in the debate, and it carried. We saved OHSU. By the way, they could be a bigger part with this independence initiative if we had rural health clinics to not only stay in Elgin, but OHSU, using some creativity, could frankly, not them, us, mm-hmm. with adequate funding, because remember the cap is now costing them a few million dollars at OHSU already in place with their cuts. The fact of the matter is, with the dollars for the independent side, we could have rural clinics growing and doing the job we need to have done. In the end, it's similar to the story I tell you about OHSU, because there we brought money into the general fund, mm-hmm. just like we did with OTO1, you did. When you funded money for the bridges, you brought in millions of dollars through employees working into this general fund. The opposite is true in some respects, because if we don't get at this during this window that I'd love to have George Naughton come and talk about you, With the economist was in front of us, mm-hmm. state economist, Tom Patiowski. The fact of the matter is, all of these other programs not only are threatened, many of them are going to have to go bye-bye, and Oregon is no longer the state that you're going to be proud of. So it's funny, older guys, because I'm 66, mm-hmm. Bill's just a couple years older than me, and you're not there yet, but in about 15 years or 20, you'll be there, Jeff. So where I'm at is, let's take the lead, like we did in mm-hmm. 75. Let's be creative. We're going to have to fund it with a dedicated fund, both independent work. You've heard what those are. You have the group that can take, that can be the foundation, the building blocks of this already, from what I've heard. And I'll be glad to help. I don't know why I haven't been included in the work groups, because I have a lifelong history of this issue. Although I'm so busy on all kinds of other projects that I assume that's probably why, nor were they knowledgeable about this. I would like to see us come in with a proposal that begins to say we not only will take the lead in America again, but quite frankly, it's not just about the lead. I'm concerned with kids. I'm concerned with our university. So are you. And those are, when you listen to the professional economists and when they will tell you what the number one crisis is in terms of making legislators see it and hear it and feel it. Folks, it's a decade out, maybe not even that, frankly. You're going to begin seeing your cost for long-term care go from here to up through that roof. And what does that mean, bottom line? It means you just took money away from all other programs. And since we're the primary funding source for K-12, I would assume OEA maybe should want to come to the table. Mental health organizations should want to be at the table. Universities should want to be at the table. And rather than solving this independence and long-term care with older people like me and you, I'm sorry to call us that, but we are, the fact of the matter is all other groups need to clearly understand the fiscal implications for future funding of this state. If I get emotional on that, it's because I care so damn much, and I'm glad I accidentally sat through this. I appreciate it, Mr. Chair, and you, Jeff. I'm sorry I call you that. I think so much of you guys, of what you've done personally for me here today, and I want to help you. I'm not here to just do this. I will help you with labor, education. This, we have to broaden this group to understand this isn't just about grandma and grandpa. This is about funding for all other programs, and rather than me talk about it, we need to document it with data, and we now have the data to do that. So thank you.
Thank you very much, and we will include you. Good, thanks. Bob, you're out of time.
Thank you, Senator Morissette. Committee Administrator did ask if I could come back tomorrow, say like 15 minutes at 1 o'clock.
Well, yeah, yes, and I appreciate you being here today. You were on the agenda. We had planned to include you, but we would like to start off with you tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
So we can give it the time.
I can go home now and plan my trip to Africa.
Where are you going now?
We're
going
to go to South Africa and be in base camps around the lions and stuff like that. So.
Well, you just got back from Paris.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you for being here. Okay. Any other?
Yes, Chair. I just want to thank everybody. This is helpful. It truly is.
Yeah. Good. Okay. We are adjourned.